All right, this is Frank Maloney with Jim Hobgood. We're down here in Greensboro, the Greensboro Coliseum, for the 57th annual ACC tournament. And we have the distinct pleasure of corralling none other than Deadly Dan Bonner, a TV analyst and a former Wahoo player that actually played a little basketball with Jimbo.
That is true. That is true. We were teammates. Last night we visited with Wally Walker, also a teammate of mine. And you know, most people think about Dan Bonner and Wally Walker in the same thought pattern when they think about Virginia basketball as far as career records and so forth. But just teasing. But, you know, Dan has gone on to a stellar career in the media.
Absolutely. In fact, so much so, he's got his own little display badge here that says TV Gold. And I didn't see anybody else with that.
Well, everybody from TV has a TV Gold, and we got this red button on here.
And what does that mean?
That means that we don't have to go through the metal detector.
Ah.
Uh-huh. Well, that's not a good decision by the people here at We could have 20-some thousand at risk tomorrow, you know. But at any rate, Dan, thanks for joining us. ACC this year, some surprises, I guess, on the positive side. Maryland on the disappointing side. North Carolina, is that how you see it?
Yeah, that really is how I see it, Jim. I guess in most of the preseason stuff, Maryland was picked 6th or 7th or somewhere in that neighborhood, and they really did perform very well. And I thought at the start of the season, and I actually told people this, and so Maryland has made me look pretty good. And I said I thought Maryland would be much better than where they were picked because they had all the elements that I thought they needed to be successful in this day and age in college basketball. Mainly,
to give you credit, I think I heard you say that at one point in time early on.
Mainly yes. Experience in the backcourt.
Right.
And this Jordan Williams has really developed for them, and that has helped them a great deal. But as I looked at their experience, their depth, I thought they would be a pretty good team. And I'm surprised that they have played as well down the stretch as they have. But, and of course, North Carolina, I told people at the start of the year, I didn't think they'd be this bad, but I thought maybe 8-8, 9-7 in the league would be good for them, but it has obviously been a very surprising and disappointing year for North Carolina fans.
Well, for the same reason, only in the reverse, their guard play has not been very productive.
They can't shoot the ball, and I think what we've seen with North Carolina, and I've said this before, that these guys who are playing for North Carolina proved themselves last year to be very good complementary players. And so everybody was just assuming, okay, they will step up and they will carry heavier loads, but everybody can't do that. And I think what we've seen from these guys at North Carolina is they are very good complementary players, but they are not the guys who can carry the heavy burdens. And I think that's true across the board. And then you add to that the fact that they can't shoot threes. And if you can't shoot threes in this day and age, you're just not going to have very much success.
Yeah, when you think about Hansbrough, Ellington, and Lawson, those are three pretty serious losses.
Well, and Danny Green.
Well, that's true, too.
Those
yeah.
were four guys who
yeah,
were
another all guy on the perimeter.
Who were all drafted in the first 15 picks in the NBA draft. And, I mean,
how do you replace that?
Well, you don't, and if the name on the uniform was anything other than North Carolina, nobody would have been talking about that team as being in the top division of the ACC or going back to the Final Four. But it's the reputation that program has built, and justifiably so, that people think they'll just be able to replace anything they lose and keep going on.
But yeah, I think early this year I heard you say positive things about the Hokies. Are they a threat to win the tournament this weekend?
I think they are if they can score. And I mean, that sounds stupid. Of course, that's how we determine who wins basketball games, who scores the most points. But Virginia Tech is a team that guards you pretty well. And they're a team that when they can put points on the board, when they can apply offensive pressure in addition to defensive pressure, they can be pretty good. That game that they played against Maryland was an absolute classic during the regular season. And when they can play at that level, when they can play at the level at which they played when they beat Georgia Tech in the final game of the regular season, it's a very dangerous team. An upset team, you know, somebody who would be a surprise to win the tournament, I think, are the Clemson Tigers. I think Clemson is a team that has all the elements except they don't shoot the three very well. But I have seen them play in games where they have shot the three well. The first half that they played against Maryland up at Maryland, they were fabulous. And if that Clemson team can show up and play 40 minutes four nights in a row, that's a Clemson team that could win this tournament.
Now, Clemson is a team or a school that doesn't have a great track record at the ACC tournament. Does that matter? I always think this is a different team. Those were past teams.
No, I don't think that makes any difference at all. And particularly, it might make a difference, Jim, if they played the ACC tournament in the same place every year. But even the Clemson players on the team who haven't had success in past NCAA tournaments or ACC tournaments. They haven't had it here.
Right.
And Clemson actually did play a game here. They played UNC Greensboro in November, and they beat the stuffing out of them. So Clemson has had success on this floor.
Does Wake Forest have to do anything here to get in the tournament?
I think that Wake Forest would do themselves a big favor if they could beat Miami. I don't think they need to do any more than that. But I think Miami will be a difficult test for them, simply because I don't really think they're playing all that well. Teams have sort of figured out, hey, don't play them in transition because that allows Al-Farouq Aminu to do what he does best, and don't let Ish Smith get all the way to the basket. Make him shoot over somebody or make him pass the ball back outside, and in those circumstances, Wake Forest hasn't really played very well.
Yeah, I told Frank on the way down here, Seth Greenberg in the Virginia Tech-Wake game, Wake's ahead at halftime, Seth goes to a zone in the second half, and Wake really struggled offensively.
They
only, 4 points.
Yeah, they only really have two guys, Ari Stewart and C.J. Harris, who can make threes. And if either one of those guys are not shooting the ball well, they're in trouble. But when they make threes, I mean, this is a team that beat Gonzaga at Gonzaga. How often does that happen? In fact, it's happened four times in Gonzaga's building since they opened it 10 years ago. So, but when those two guys are making threes, Wake can be pretty good. But those two guys don't make threes all the time.
Yeah, they're making threes. You and I should come back and petition for that extra year of eligibility.
You could come back, Jim, and make the threes. I could make, I'm lucky to make layups. I was in the old days.
Okay, you guys cut it out. All right, Wake Forest coming in with a 9-7 record. They seem to have a pretty tough draw after Miami in that they'd have to play their old nemesis, the Hokies. And if they get by them, then they got to play the Dukies. So it's a tough road for them. Looking at Clemson, though, I think Clemson actually has a marvelous opportunity to make some real noise because they're playing NC State right out of the gate, a confidence-building game potentially. Then they play Florida State, a team that's on the court right now taking their practice and their shoot-around. And that's a team that they're dead even with. So they could beat them. And then they'd have to play Maryland, and that's where they find out what they're really made of.
Well, I think that it actually breaks down pretty well for Clemson. I think Florida State is a very difficult matchup because no matter how good you are, it's hard to score against Florida State. But Florida State doesn't score well either. And then I think if the thing follows through to its logical progression, Clemson actually matches up very well against Maryland because with Jerae Grant and with Devin Booker, they have a guy who can match up against Landon Milbourne. Landon Milbourne has problems with guys who are big and strong and guys who are also have a little bit of quickness about them. So I think that Clemson is a very difficult matchup for Maryland.
Hmm. All right, looking at Virginia. All right, so the Hoos coming in with just a dreadful close to the season, a chance to play a team that they've seen recently that gave them a fit in the first half, and then Virginia hung with them the whole second half in Boston College. What does Virginia have to do, Dan, to win tomorrow at the 12 noon game?
They have to score points. And you know, again, you laugh about
that. How do you become such a good analyst?
Now, I'm telling you.
You can see why he's got the gold card.
Yeah. Look at what they did in the second half against Maryland. They scored 40 points. That's the first time that this Virginia team has scored 40 points in a half since January the 31st. All right, so they went more than a month before they scored 40 points in the half.
Right.
And Virginia is the kind of a team, when you're playing Virginia, whether you're Boston College or whoever it is, you feel no pressure to score when you have the ball because you're confident that they're not going to score very much. As I say, people talk all the time about exerting defensive pressure. Well, I think sometimes teams have to exert offensive pressure. Boston College is not a very good offensive basketball team, but if Virginia cannot score and score consistently, then Boston College can get in a rhythm. They won't feel the pressure when they come down to score this basket, because if they don't, then Virginia builds the big lead.
Well, what happened in that second half against Maryland, not to jump in, but Jeff Jones, and my feeling all year was he was the key. You know, when Sylvan was still on the team and Mike Scott, you had a sense that they could contribute, but I always feel you got to at least have three. Ideally, you have five guys that can score, but you got to have it three. And I thought Jeff Jones at least had the potential to go out there and make some shots. And he did that in the second half against Maryland. Unfortunately, Vasquez matched him 3 for 3 down the stretch. But that's the kind of player Vasquez is. But Jeff Jones certainly, if he plays well and makes some shots, that might at least help them compete.
Well, if that is the case, and we've got to have three, Mianse is going to be our go-to guy. Then you hope Jones has got his A game. Who's the third scorer?
Well, it's got to be Sammy Zaglinski.
Or Mike Scott, depending on his attitude. You know, don't get me wrong.
I love Jerome.
I think Jerome is a great guy, great kid, student athlete, perfect. But if he's your go-to guy, you're gonna struggle. But he's not that skill level.
Last two games and over the last month, he's been the most reliable guy with the ball.
Well, what he has established, I think, is very important for Virginia. He has established himself as another guy that the opponent has to guard. One of the things when I talk to opposing coaches about Virginia, they mention that they don't guard people. And, you know, I had that discussion with Tony Bennett and with Jason Williford. And their problem, as far as I saw it, even with Sylvan Landisberg on the team, is there's too many guys on the Virginia team that the opposition doesn't have to guard.
Yeah, and in the Maryland game the other day, second half, Jontel Evans got the ball in the deep corner. And I can't even remember who was guarding him, but he backed away from him.
Yeah, well, see, Evans is one of the guys, nobody in this league guards him.
Right.
Now, as a person who has experience with being out on the basketball court and having the other team not guard you.
He's pulling your leg.
I can tell you.
He was double-teamed all the time.
I can tell you that there is one way that you can get everybody's attention, and that is you start dribbling the ball to the basket.
Right.
So if you stand outside and hold the ball, nobody's ever going to guard you.
Right.
So you have to do something, even if you're not going to score points, to make people at least pay some attention to you so the guys who can score the points don't have to be double and triple-teamed.
So you must initiate and get aggressive and force their hand.
Well, you don't want to force the ball to the basket, but something just as simple. You tell player X, okay, you're guarding Jontel Evans, but back way off of him. He's not going to do anything. And Jontel Evans dribbles the ball toward the basket. Well, player X is going to think, well, wait a minute. I don't want him to score. You know, I got to go guard him.
Well, the flip side of the coin, though, is if I'm giving the guy 10 feet, it gives me a better chance to guard him when he makes his move to the basket.
But see, what my point is, he doesn't have to make his move to the basket to score. He makes his move to the basket to make somebody guard him,
yep.
So then that therefore somebody who actually can score a basket is,
kick it out.
It has one guy on him instead of two or three.
All right, we've got to move to another topic real quickly. Jim and I have been talking frequently in the last couple of weeks, all this discussion about the big dance. Traditionally, it was for many years 64 teams. They added that play-in game, so you've got 65 teams now in it. And now there's all this talk, television ratings, this, that, and the other, and more revenue. And is it going to bump up to 96 teams? Is that a good idea? Who likes it? Who doesn't like it?
Well, I don't like it, for one thing. But I think it's definitely going to happen.
I was going to say, does the people that sign your paychecks from CBS like it?
Well, I don't know that they really have any choice in the matter. And, you know, the NCAA has an option that they can opt out of the contract that they have with CBS at the end of this tournament. If they do not exercise that option, then the people that I work for at CBS, they have the tournament for an additional 3 years. But so nobody knows what's going to happen, and obviously my employers at CBS don't consult me to find out what I think should happen. But my personal opinion about expanding the tournament field to 96 is I think it would be a very bad idea. And I say that in light of the fact that the tournament at one time was 25 teams, and then it was 32 teams, and then it was 40 teams. And so I have to admit that every time the tournament has expanded, it has become more popular, not less. And I think that what is going on right now is, keep in mind that the NCAA owns the NIT. And so if they expanded right now, the way they're looking at it is, hey, wait a minute, in tournaments that we're running, we've got 97 teams.
Right.
And so if they expanded the NCAA tournament, I think they would eliminate the NIT. My biggest objection to it is...
No, hold it. Eliminate the NIT,
yes,
or eliminate it from this, under the control of the NCAA?
Well, you know, they might sell it on eBay or something. I don't know, but they own the NIT.
It'd be a heck of a deal.
But what I'm telling you is that what you would eliminate is a couple of things. Right now, not very much, but schools like ACC schools, they have to play somebody in the non-conference schedule to build their strength of schedule. If there are 96 teams, you wouldn't do that. You would play the weakest schedule you could non-conference, so you just have a winning record overall no matter what you had in the conference. So I think that's one problem. The other problem is, what have we been talking about for the last 3 months? Who's in, who's out? All that goes away if you go to 96 teams.
Well, yeah, that would really hurt the TV schedule early in the season, because one of the nice things about college basketball as opposed to college football, you can actually lose a game early and still be in the picture. So teams do play sometimes tough schedules early on.
But I think you'll see schools from the major conference, they'll play in one of those by ESPN tournaments in Orlando or Anaheim or Maui or something like that. They'll do that.
Right.
And then the ACC teams will have to play in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, but I guarantee you after that they won't play anybody.
You know, it's interesting. During their discussions, it appeared most folks in the media don't like the idea of this. CBS probably loves this idea. The coaches probably like it because more teams get in, less pressure on them. The conferences probably don't like it because it will dilute their conference tournaments. Anyway,
no question.
We're headed for our third break. You're listening to Who's Talking. We'll be back on the other side to wrap up our preview of tomorrow's action.
Yeah, and do thank Dan Bonner for joining us. Have some great broadcasts tomorrow and Friday. We'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Dan.